Breakout Fonder Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Liss. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged You. And with me tonight, dressed very spiffy, is Mr. Ryan Lopes. You can find him on Twitter at StillRyan5, I guess. What did it change? Looked at you adjusting your jacket and...
It's the same thing. The cardigan has you blinded. For those that were lucky enough to join us, NFL draft day one, night one, Matt Kelly was nice enough to host a fucking Zoom. I rolled up with the same cardigan. I love this cardigan. J. Crew recently filed for bankruptcy, Nate. I'm a big J. Crew guy. So I gotta fucking buy all the cardigans because they're gonna be, I don't know, going through some shit. But all J. Crew and fashion talk aside, Cinco de Mayo. I'm a big Cinco de Mayo guy. Did not enjoy a marg today. Drank a couple Moscow Mules. Big Moscow Mule guy as well. Riding shotgun with a mango Truly right now. Had some pizza tonight. Didn't go Mexican. Went pizza. I'm thriving right now, buddy. I'm ready to talk some fantasy football, and we can talk a little bit about Taylor and Edwards-Helaire if you want. You know, I don't know. Is that the alley-oop you want right now?
Is it too soon? I mean, the Clyde Edwards-Helaire episode / Jonathan Taylor Warzone episode. I mean, if you guys are unaware, Matt Kelly and myself on the Sonic Truth podcast went live last Saturday to do a mock draft. And we had every intention of doing multi-round mock draft. I went 101. I went Clyde Edwards. 45 minutes later, we got to the 102. That's no lie. And we have a lot of cross podcast listeners here. So I'm sure many of you heard it. And as I've told Ryan, we talked about some of this pre-show. My mentions have been on fire, and I have responded to no one.
Disaster.
I have responded to no one because I'm beholden to no man. Okay? I'm not going to be your puppet. Matt Kelly knows. He knows the smoke that showed up that Saturday afternoon. He knows what he walked into.
He caught you. He caught you in a moment, man. I've never seen you so I mean, you've been passionate before, but this is a different Nate List on Saturday.
No, that's right. He, you know, he won't admit it, but he was out of his element. It was like a heavy London fog rolled in, and he was like, "Uh-oh, what's this? What's this London fog?" But again, all the listeners of the episode in waves, as I've told some of my friends, my mentions for at least the last 48 hours have been redlined on 20 plus notifications. Every time I hit it, it's at 20 plus again. Clear it, 20 plus. Clear it, 20 plus. I don't always have this much activity in my mentions. When you have so much that you have to hit the show me more button, that's when you know you have too many. So I'm fucking buried, and I understand people's point of view. And as Ryan and I talked about 1 week earlier, if we all hopped in a time machine right now and we went back in time 1 week, just 1 week, we could all have prepped ourselves. I could have preemptively told these guys about this war, but we had Scott Barrett and we had Graham Barfield on the show, Ryan. And what did they say about Clyde Edwards and Jonathan Taylor?
Emphatically, the boys came out. And just knowing where they both came from, and I've talked to them plenty pre-draft, during the draft, throughout the process. Jonathan Taylor fans, as you and I are, but both of them emphatically came out and said, it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire 1.01, and it's not even close.
Wow.
There's no room. They didn't want to talk about Taylor. You know, we gave Taylor a little bit of airtime. We gave Indianapolis a little bit of airtime. They didn't want to talk about Taylor, Nate. They wanted Clyde. They wanted the guy that was attached, tethered to Patty Mahomes and that billion-dollar arm. It's not even a conversation. Having Andy Reid doesn't hurt either. So again, situation, quarterback play, all that stuff. I know you were in the ring, Nate. We don't have to bring it back up if you don't want to. But you hashed over all these points. Graham and Scott and a bunch of other people that are super respected in the industry. It's interesting to see our guy Matt Kelly, man, take the other side, you know, and it made for some great radio, Nate. So hats off to both of you.
It, you know, as everybody knows, and as you mentioned, you know, off air as well, every year, every few months, there's a blowout episode. Annually, there's a famous fight that goes down. I saw people in the YouTube comments that were like, two dudes that are friends would never talk to each other like this. There's no way these guys like each other. Like people, you know, we always joke, like the line that always comes out in the end is people don't get the show. They don't understand the show. And don't get me wrong, in that moment, we're truly debating. You know, we are both not backing down. As Matt mentioned,
it's passionate.
He would have gone 2 straight hours.
He called himself the alpha.
Yeah, I don't know why.
He called himself the alpha.
He would have gone all day. He said to me, and I don't even know if it made the show or not. We might have talked at the end of the show. He told me that he would have stayed in that argument for as long as it took till I changed the subject. Like, he was not going to back down. And at some point, it kept going and going. Like, he was one of those, like, inflatable clowns with the weight at the bottom where you can knock it back and it keeps coming back up.
The battle just bounces.
Yeah. Yeah, he was unstoppable. Like, I felt like every punch that he threw missed me. But clearly, if you were to go into my mentions and get on Twitter, he dropped thousands and thousands of bombs on me.
Kelly is a charismatic fellow. He's obviously built an incredible following, ground up. The guy is, there's very few, if any, that are better than Matt Kelly doing what Matt Kelly does. And again, the minion army, the buzzard army, again, listening to the show, you know, years, months pass, those are just kind of words, but as your mentions can attest, man, though, I mean, the army is real, and they are passionate, they are driven. Whatever Matt says goes, and Matt had the Taylor side, and you opposed him, so your mentions, I imagine, are just a complete landfill, which is unfortunate for you.
Let me just tell every one of you that's got hate in my mentions, let me tell you that my people, we don't forget. And I'm going to go back to those mentions in 2022, and I'm going to dig those up, and I'm going to bury you. I'm going to find each one of you, even if your account goes dormant for a year and a half. You're going to be walking through a Walmart, bloop, you're going to get a mention on your phone, and it's going to be me. I'm going to find you, and I'm going to bend you over a barrel, okay? Graham Barfield, Scott Barrett came on this show. Smart guys. Tons of numbers. Laid it out. Said it's not close. You should be very afraid. I hope you sleep with one eye open for the next 2 years, because I'm coming for you.
You have a borderline Macho Man Randy Savage undertone to your delivery right now, and I'm fucking fired up.
I can't wait till we get about 2 years ahead, brother. And I'm going to find every single person that laid waste to my mentions. And I'm going to gut them one by one. And Matt Kelly, I won't get him. I can't do anything about it, I guess. I don't know.
When he unleashes the army on you, and like we joked about pre-show, he's got, they're not even subtle victory laps. He's taken full-blown victory laps on Twitter, which is just drumming up the support. You know, he's got patrons that didn't even know that he had it. You know, he's got the whole band behind him. So it's tough sledding for you, buddy. And I'm sorry.
Matt hit the game winner and just ran right out of the stadium.
He's gone.
It was the goatiest move of all time. It's all good.
It was.
And he did the sheep. No, to be honest with you, none of the episode got to me. None of the episode got to me till he started making the sheep sound for like 8 straight seconds. And then that's when I was like, all right, this is too much. At this point, now it's become too much.
You're just annoying the shit out of me.
Yeah. Now I'm just actually getting upset. But listen, if you guys want the real scoop on exactly what happened, Ryan and I haven't even talked about it on this episode. There's way more to the inner workings of how the Sonic Truth Dynasty podcast works. I go into this in detail in an amazing new I'm Outraged episode on Patreon, patreon.com/I'm Outraged. I break it down. Matt Kelly knew more than he led on to in that episode. That is fine. Check that out. But Ryan, on this episode, the Breakout Finder podcast, we're going to get into some questions. We've got patron questions. We've got apparently Twitter questions, quite a few of them.
Way too many.
If they've got Kyler Murray in them, they're immediately getting X'd. We don't do Kyler Murray on the show. They're
being thrown in the dumpster. Dude, it blows my mind. Every week we get a Kyler Murray question. It doesn't make sense to me. I think people are fucking with us at this point. I'm almost convinced people are fucking with us at this point.
We can't. There's just absolutely no way that we can do a Kyler Murray question on the show. I refuse to do a Kyler Murray question on the show, at least at this point. So let's get into this. Let's read a couple of these questions. This first one's pretty good because I think some recent news has come out about a couple of prospects. So the first question comes from our boy Puma Pants on Patreon, and it says, I want to pose this question again. With the upcoming college season and the uncertainty that will happen or the possibility of a shortened season, do you think it's possible that some of these players decide to go back for a final year, or they might rethink their decision and try to enter the supplemental draft? And if so, what kind of impact will that have? Ryan, what are your thoughts on that? Have you read anything or done any thinking about this?
Yeah, this is, again, being the super prepared co-host and contributor that I am here, I pulled up the show sheet all about 20 minutes ago, and perfect. And this obviously the very first question, top of the key here. I was like, damn, this is a pretty deep one to start the show here. And I will say coincidentally, one of the tweets that I saw, it wasn't from any account that had any sort of blue check mark or any kind of credibility, but there was, I think, some buzz that Travis Etienne might be considering entering the supplemental draft. And obviously that is a huge name for those in obviously Debbie circles, dynasty circles, a player that we were expecting to declare this previous draft, decided to go back to school. A bit of a shocker in that regard, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see more kids, again, if the ETN news is even legit or not, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see more kids, kind of approaching their next step, their career in a similar manner, just because of the unknown of the college football season. Obviously so much up in the air. I'm not going to sit here and speculate that I know what's going to happen with the COVID-19 and how, college and all this stuff is going to play the reopening and all this stuff. But, a lot of these players could see the supplemental draft as a pretty obvious, next step, given just, again, the unknown. So this is super deep here, Nate. I'd be curious to get your thoughts as well. Do you think this is a logical next step for some of these kids?
I mean, at this point, there's so much uncertainty, exactly as you said, and it kind of comes down to if you stay at college, it's the college degree route, and you hope that college football keeps going. But for a guy like Travis Etienne, a lot of us believe he should have come out this year. I mean, he was primed to come out this year. He would have been one of the top backs in the class. No doubt there would have been an argument to be made for him being probably number 2, 3, 4, right in that range, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Especially based on landing spot, that could help a lot. Mm-hmm. So the supplemental draft is very interesting because I think it was Chad Forbes maybe who was the one that kind of leaked this. I'm kind of on the fence because I'm not really sure if there's much, validity to garner from this, just because it's the first time we've ever experienced this, number one. So there's a ton of speculation. And number two, for fantasy terms, what do? If you haven't done your rookie draft yet, then it's fine. But for guys like me and many others, we've already done rookie drafts. So how do you handle dealing with these rookies that are coming in after the fact? I've heard a lot of people that do auction leagues are going to do like a blind auction supplemental draft where, you can either throw it all in or, you can essentially spend whatever amount it takes to acquire these guys. And I guess that makes sense. But for those of us that don't play in auction leagues, that play in typical leagues where you're just getting draft picks based on your landing spot from your standings finish a year before, I don't know what you do. This might have changed some things for me based on how I draft, especially if Travis Etienne was actually in my draft. It would have changed everything. So this could very well be a logical step, and we're going to learn a lot more as we go forward. But very interesting news, and it's made me start to rethink my 2021 picks because you look at the NFL draft this year, and prior to the draft, I think some of it went kind of chalk, some of it didn't. But you heard a lot of sort of rumors going around that teams were really going to shake stuff up. Guys that you didn't expect to go high were going to go really high. I think a few people did, but for the most part, I mean, Brandon Ayuk creeped up there a little more than I actually expected. I mean, we heard he was a first-round guy. He ended up going in the first round, but I kind of thought, okay, he's got enough buzz. He's probably going to be maybe a mid-early day two guy, but he went high. So I think some of that came to fruition, but when I think about 2021, when you think about the potential that coaches and teams and evaluators are really not potentially going to get a look at these guys a year later, and if they're sticking to sort of the guidelines that are being laid before them, you know, maybe not training in groups or, you know, not going to the facility or whatever they do, it's going to be kind of on the players to sort of take care of themselves or in small training groups or whatever. So it's really interesting, and it's made me kind of rethink what I'm doing with 2021 picks. I've been acquiring second-round picks for quite some time in the 2021 class, but it'll be very interesting what happens, you know, especially if some of these guys come out in the supplemental draft. So, you know, with the pandemic, everything is up in the air right now. I'm not sure anybody knows. And like you said, I don't want to pretend to know, but yeah. I'm certainly being a bit cautious with my draft capital and with my decision-making in the event that something crazy does happen, because it seems like every day something's changing with this, because we're learning more. And as people have talked about with the pandemic, that, you know, there could kind of be a resurgence of it. We, you know, all these people have been inside and we've been, you know, social distancing, but that doesn't mean this thing can't spike back up. And if that happens, you know, players aren't going to be playing anytime soon, and colleges are going to more, you know, online school versus in-classroom curriculum. So, I mean, it's very, very possible. So, good question from Puma Pants. Hold on to those 2021 picks and wait this thing out. This one's from Gabriel Mesa. This one's for you. This one's for Ryan.
I'm in the hot seat.
This is Ryan. Warm. How do you value Devy picks versus regular picks? And I'm assuming he's meaning rookie picks.
Yeah. It's a good question. You know, this is you know, kind of to go a little higher level. This is kind of the fun of it for me and the whole Devy kind of, you know, it's super niche, but there's a good bit of us, and it's I feel like it's kind of growing a little bit. But, you know, Devy and the draft process in general for me is about, you know, taking a stand, planting a flag. You know, you've had these premonitions, you've had your guys for, you know, X amount of time, you know, 3 years, and then they declare, whatever the case may be. For Devy as well, it's cool to kind of get out ahead of these players. And, you know, if you truly follow this stuff, you're watching these kids in high school, you're watching the whole high school recruitment process, and you get a good idea, a good feel for the type of talent these kids are, and obviously you can kind of get a feel right away if you're dealing with someone that's, you know, truly a blue chips, you know, prospect versus someone that kind of truly grows and grows and ascends during his, you know, three years at school or whatever. So all that to say, certainly the rookie picks is where the safety is. You know, Devy picks could certainly play off in the long run. And again, if you have a really good read on a player, you know, those who might have followed a Ja'Marr Chase, you know, are certainly getting ready to kind of reap those rewards because things have played out absolutely spectacularly. And that story's been written before with other various players as well. I will say, obviously, there's a lot more risk with the on the Devy side of things. You know, obviously the actual talent that you're watching and the perceived talent and kind of what you look for in players, sometimes that stuff doesn't always shake out. There's tons of variables once kids get to school. You know, the offense evolves, there's coaching changes, this, that. There's tons of variables throughout the entire, you know, draft process. It's nothing but different roadblocks and hurdles and stuff that these players have to clear. So for that path to be open the entire time is certainly the rarity. So if your roster is in a good spot where you have a luxury of kind of adding, you know, these kind of, you know, what might be perceived as these kind of flyer picks, these taxi squad players, these Devy picks, they're a great luxury to have. Certainly, I myself being a little more conservative in that regard and just trying to play it safer, knowing what I'm getting myself into, you know, I kind of lean towards the rookie side of things for the sake of this question. Mm.
No, and that's probably the right way to go. I mean, Devy can be difficult, and, you know, the rookies are certainly a little easier to gamble on, especially in a class like this. I mean,
yeah,
much easier. So, man, I love when people are directly asking questions to Ryan, man. You got to unlock what's in this man's brain. Okay. All right, man. I'm gonna try this last name again. I always struggle. I feel shaky. Pavan Kambatla.
I think you nailed it, buddy. God, I think you nailed it.
So nervous. Let me know, Pavan. This is my man. He was there during the YouTube fight. I saw him in the mentions.
Is that right?
Appreciate you, sir.
He was a ringside.
He was there real time. So he witnessed it. He the sweat, you know, came off the gloves and flicked into the first row. He was front row. So
the audience was getting.
He goes, as I've discussed some around this topic in other comments, how do we see AJ Dillon's usage in Green Bay? With all the coach speak of dialing up the run game, lesson learned from embarrassing loss to the 49ers, how does that impact Aaron Jones?
Yeah, I mean, the Packers, I had a tweet, you know, the day or so after the draft where I said, you know, zero hyperbole. The Packers had literally the worst draft I've ever seen as long as I've been following the draft. Like, the Packers drafted like absolute dog shit. You know, they drafted a backup quarterback. They drafted a tight end to be a fullback, I guess. They drafted a running back two or three in A.J. Dillon. Now, again, all joking aside, and again, I was not being hyperbolic by saying all that, but joking aside, the A.J. Dillon is a player that certainly rose for me a little bit. You know, speaking of Scott Barrett was in Dillon's corner for much of the process. Clearly an athletic back for a bigger back, but certainly more limited. But given the draft capital that this team sunk into him, you know, I think there's probably one side of the argument that says, you know, this front office and the coach, like a combination of the two, don't really know what they're doing. You know, they're not, you know, they're not interested in maximizing Aaron Rodgers' final X amount of seasons, whatever it might be, and they might just be done with Aaron Rodgers right now. And the same could probably be said for Aaron Jones. Now, I won't speak too much here because I think my bias might start creeping in a little bit here. Aaron Jones to me is a phenomenal running back. He was a player that I think I had as an easy top 10 back last season. And when he's gotten the workload, when he's gotten the proper burn, he's produced, you know, super efficient on the ground, very viable in the passing, just an all around, you know, quote unquote perfect back for today's NFL. But again, much like Aaron Rodgers, the Packers don't seem too interested in capitalizing Aaron Jones and kind of maximizing his full potential. So they're going ahead and sinking, you know, these valuable early round picks into players like AJ Dillon to siphon some of the work away. We've seen him try to split work in the past with guys like Jamal Williams that, again, are okay runners, but they're much like Dillon, you know, Williams is limited. So to me, you know, you have an asset like Aaron Jones. You want to fully utilize that asset. They should be building, you know, the ground game around him. You know, you still have Aaron Rodgers. The game should be going through the air through Aaron Rodgers, but Aaron Jones is clearly, in my opinion, a running back one. So yeah, I mean, I am an AJ, you know, an Aaron Jones owner. As an Aaron Jones owner, I was kind of nervous last year, certainly a little more nervous this year. I don't think AJ Dillon's necessarily a threat talent wise, but given where he was drafted and given my perceived, you know, perception of this coaching staff's just ineptitude, I think Dillon could kind of rain on Jones's parade a little bit for sure. And yeah, I would start getting a little bit nervous unless things change up front, which I don't think is going to happen any sooner than maybe Aaron Rodgers gets the boot next, you know?
And you know what's really interesting? We saw this a multitude of times throughout this NFL draft. Clyde Edwards goes to Kansas City, Damian Williams. He's a unrestricted free agent in 2020. Jonathan Taylor goes to the Colts, Marlon Mack, unrestricted free agent in 2020. AJ Dillon goes to the Packers, Aaron Jones, unrestricted free agent, 2020. And the Packers are up against the cap. I mean, they've got a lot of players that they need to re-sign and they need to deal with. And one thing that was a shocker was that you get the GM, Brian Gutekunst, and talking about how they perceive him. And he actually says, in our offense, there's probably more room for his creativity than what he did at Boston College and a lot more in the passing game. He goes on to say he's really an all-around back. While he was not used in the passing game a ton at Boston College, it's not because he's not capable. It was just kind of their offense. I think he'll bring that to the table, and you'll see more of that in his pro career. So, I mean, they were impressed with how he performed at the combine in the passing drills. They talked to his head coach, Mike Owen, at Boston College. He raves about his ability to catch the ball, even though you didn't see it that much. And that might be another little hedge. I mean, it's something that Derrick Henry doesn't do well, despite having this monstrous size similar to A.J. Dillon. So with Aaron Jones' contract up in the air, who knows if they re-sign him? I think Aaron Jones has proved that he deserves a bigger contract, and maybe that's with another team. But the way that the NFL looks, at least coming out of this draft, and perhaps in the future, might be that these running backs, their contracts aren't as, they're not as lucrative as they used to be. And with the new collective bargaining agreement, people can't really hold out. And we talked about this on the Sonic Truth Dynasty podcast. Part of it now is that if players hold out beyond the date that they're expected to be at training camp, they do not accrue a full season, which means they become a restricted free agent the next year. So if they're on a four-year rookie deal, they essentially give fifth-year control to a team. And if they hold out, the fines that are accrued can no longer be waived by the organization. So if a player holds out all the way through the season or up until the end of training camp, he can accrue a level of fines that equate to what he was going to make in salary, and he essentially plays for free and gives up club control. So these guys are really up against the wall at this point in their career, and Aaron Jones doesn't have much of a choice but to come out and play. And it could be very interesting if there's any delay to the season, but certainly, as you brought up, A.J. Dillon got the draft capital. I mean, he was a second-round pick. This was truthfully unexpected. But in hindsight, maybe it wasn't, as we look at a couple other players in this draft that were taken as hedges against guys that are going into contract years. Maybe they just don't want to pay them because they realize that you should be able to put just about any running back there and typically get production. Now, Aaron Jones is very talented. But if they saw this in A.J. Dillon and they believe that he brings underrated value in the passing game and they know he can run between the tackles, it's evident. Maybe he's going to be the guy going forward. So I picked him up in a draft recently. I moved up into the, I think it was still there in the third round. It was ridiculous. And I moved up and put a couple small picks together through a future 2021 second, because I got so many of them. I just keep acquiring them. And I went and got them because I question what they're going to do with, with that backfield as well. I just don't know what Aaron Jones' future is. So it's certainly something to consider. This one is from Dan Thury. It says, question for Ryan. Another question. Two for Ryan.
Two, bro. They got me for two this week.
Are you ready?
I'm putting overtime, Nate.
Ryan, who are some of the underrated prospects for Devy? Who should we be looking out for in the upcoming 2020 college football season, if there is one?
Yeah, I love it. We'll try to remain as optimistic as possible on this show. Nate and I, we don't know, so we won't pretend like we do know. So we'll talk like there is ball coming up this fall. I will say you guys need to be following. If you follow me, if you follow Breakout Finder, follow all the fantastic writers we have over at BreakoutFinder.com. Guys like Corey, Doug, James, all these guys, man, are doing Noah are putting in crazy, crazy work. And a lot of these guys touch on running backs. Whereas, you know, Nate and myself, we might gravitate a little bit towards a little more towards the wide receiver play, just given that's where the app is right now. That's where our database is running right now. So I'm not going to drop too many running back names. I will mention one that stands out to me that, again, our guy Noah wrote up, Ramon Davis over at Temple, going into his sophomore year. An interesting back to look at there. Not a player that I think a ton are buzzing about right now. And again, another back that's Noah's favorite. Noah tried to slip a Kenny Gainwell question into the Twitter part. I'm gonna sidestep that one. I'm gonna Euro step Noah's Kenny Gainwell is better than Chuba Hubbard question, and I'm gonna say that Kenny Gainwell is another player that Dan you should be focusing on. Memphis is quietly turned into some sort of running back factory, like low-key running back factory. So Kenny Gainwell looks to be like the next one up there. Three names I'm gonna throw out there real quick on the wide receiver side, then we'll keep it pushing. Maybe not under the radar, but players that I personally don't feel have gotten the proper level of buzz yet. And again, we'll see how that changes when and if there is football and all that good stuff. But David Bell is a guy that Nate and I have spent a ton of time talking about over at Purdue. I swear there's going to be a Rondale Moore episode at some point. Whenever the stars and moon aligns and the time is right, we will talk about Rondale Moore and kind of his prospects. But for my money, I am a David Bell guy. Not to say that Rondale Moore is bad, but I just love what David Bell does over at Purdue, and now he gets a healthy Rondale Moore opposite him. So we'll see how things shake out for him. Again, not a player that I think many are unfamiliar with, but I just don't think he gets quite the buzz that he deserves. Another name that I'm going to throw out that might be a little bit more slept on, just given the absolute depth and just the names, the number of five stars that come through that place, Joseph Nada over at Clemson. I think he has a chance talent-wise to be kind of the best of the bunch when you talk about recent, you know, Clemson wide receivers, whether it's T. Higgins, whatever the case may be. You know, Frank Ladson was a guy that was in Joseph Nada's class as well. But Nada, for my money, is the player that I've been very, very interested in following very closely. California kid, obviously playing his ball at Clemson now. So he's someone that's been high on my personal ranks. And the last name that I'll throw out there, again, also from a bigger school, next in line perhaps at Ohio State. And I throw him out there because he is a name that, again, he has the big school pedigree. I think he has kind of all the stars aligning at the right time. He looks to be Justin Fields, you know, one entering the season, is Chris Olave over at Iowa State. Now, I throw him out there not because I think he's maybe, not a name that many are familiar with, but certainly slept in the sense that I see a lot of these preseason, you know, top 2021 wide receivers, top 10. And Chris Olave, for the reason, is absent of those lists almost all the time, which I don't think is right. And again, these preseason lists are fun, and they're not set in stone, but I think Olave is someone that deserves our attention right now. And again, assuming that we do play some ball in September and beyond, he's going to be a player that I think quickly rises up the board, as we see most of these, you know, these Ohio State, you know, wideouts do. So they certainly have a way to development over there. So those are my three names right there, just throwing them out there.
And Ryan's the Debbie guy. I mean, this is what he does. He's got a whole slew of writers, as he named. So they're constantly cranking out content over there. So again, check that out at breakoutfinder.com. Ryan, here's one from Austin Loberg. Loberg.
Okay.
Loberg? What do you think it is?
Loberg.
Loberg. Makes sense. Loberg. What's up with Drew Locke? What am I missing that everyone is very unsure about him? Drew Locke, better than Danny Dimes, Jared Goff's, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean, Drew Locke has a legit arsenal now. The Melvin Gordon signing, they snuck Jerry Jeudy out of the draft. They added KJ Hamler. They already, you know, they had Noah Fant. They had Cortland Sutton. I'm not giving up on the Deshaun Hamilton dream just yet. But you know, Drew Locke is set up for success now, assuming the offensive line play, you know, kind of elevates and stays healthy. You know, Drew Locke should be in a much better spot. So I'm not sure that people are missing on him, but I think that there are some legit concerns just given his, you know, profile coming out of school, kind of the questions. I think it was Dane Brugler of The Athletic that drew the Derek Carr parallel. And we don't have to go down the Derek Carr road here per se, but you know, the concerns about, you know, their accuracy and ability and comfortability, I guess I should say, when the pocket breaks down. You know, Drew Locke has all the arm talent in the world, as Derek Carr does, and certainly still does. So I think that parallel, I can't really shake that comparison. So do with that whatever you guys will, but the weapons certainly are there for Drew Locke. I think having Drew Locke over Danny Dimes is an absolute no-brainer. I might myself take Baker Mayfield just because we've seen him do it once before, although Nate and I have kind of put Baker on notice before, you know, but again, much like Drew Locke, Baker Mayfield certainly has the weapons around him. And Odell Beckham might have came out today or yesterday and said this is going to be his season. You know, so Odell Beckham, talking bounce back, I'm good taking any quarterback that's tied to an Odell Beckham that's you know, feeling himself and ready to kind of explode again. Darnold might be a bit of a push for me. I guess I'm more of a Darnold guy myself. I think he's got a bit more talent. Not saying the situation is good, especially with Adam Gase there. Doesn't have the same weapons, but maybe I lean a little bit more about Darnold's kind of talent and hoping that the Jets get it right when and if, you know, Gase is shown the door. Goff, I don't know, that one's close for me too, Nate. I can go either way. You know, McVay, the Rams seem to be you know, they kind of pushed all their chips in a year or two ago. And now, you know, they don't really seem to have much of a long-term plan. They kind of fumbled around the draft a little bit. But again, I kind of like having McVay on the sideline, and I think Goff's certainly a product of him. So as long as you got the coach and some decent weapons around him, I'm not too concerned. So I think Drew Lock over Dimes is acceptable. I think maybe can make a case over Goff if the Rams might be taking that downward, you know, spiral as I myself might feel like that could be coming. But yeah, I mean, I think the weapons are there. It's just a matter of let's see what he does with the full 16 in front of him now.
And if you want to take some of the coach speak with a grain of salt, some of the pre NFL draft comments that John Elway made are very interesting. He says, you know, there are some veteran quarterbacks that are still available, but we decided that we're going to build around Drew, give him an opportunity to take that job. This is, again, another quote pre-draft. By no means has Drew made it. We believe he's got the potential to do it, and we think he's just going to continue to get better and better, but he's still in the learning process and knows that he's got to get better. But what's very interesting is when you go into the NFL draft, he had a lot of say in what took place, and he wanted some speed on the team, and the Denver Broncos made it obvious what their intent was to do because they built around him, right? They go get Jerry Jeudy. They had KJ Hamler very early as well. That both guys have speed. KJ, obviously, even faster. Then they go get a center, still, you know, adding more depth to that offensive line. And then, you know, John Elway actually called Drew Lock and asked him, what do you think about Albert O? Tell me about him. You played with him at Mizzou, right? So tell me about him. And Locke went to bat for him, and they actually ended up drafting him after Drew Lock went to bat for him in the fourth round. So he's already got influence on what's happening here. So there's truly a belief in him. So I think he's got some time, but we've seen some shaky play from him before, and we've seen some good play. So I think you knew when he was coming into the draft, he was a bit of a wild card. But John Elway has certainly pushed all the chips in. I mean, this draft was shocking for them, right? All the skill position talent, plus Melvin Gordon in the offseason. You know, so there's so much offensive talent there. But he's got plenty of weapons around him. I think he's probably a cheap addition. And as far as any of these other guys, I think you did a good job of sort of laying out one to the next. I don't hate Drew Lock at all. I'm actually excited to see him going into this year because defenses are really going to have to play a different game with the Broncos. I mean, it's certainly going to be on Drew Lock's arm talent, but you can't go one-on-one with all these guys. You can't go one-on-one with Jeudy. Hamler stretches the field. Noah Fant is a borderline going to be unguardable for most linebackers. Safeties is so fast. Albert O. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch. So I don't think you're wrong. I think Drew Lock is just being underrated. So you want to say this name? I always get this wrong. I think his name's Daryl. I believe it's Daryl. I believe it is.
Yeah. Did you? I didn't know if you accidentally like fat fingered it and added an A, or if it's
Pretty sure it's Daryl. But I always look at your name, Twilly.
Silent A.
Yeah. I always look at this, and it always throws me off every time that we talk back and forth on Patreon or he comments or something. It always throws me off. But he says, 12-10 PPR rookie draft. I own the 106, and I'm hoping to grab a running back there. I'd like to double up on running back and get Vaughn. I have a deal for Terry McLaurin. 2-6 and for the 1-8 and the 3-8. I'd be trading McLaurin for the 1-8 in hopes that Vaughn is there at 8. Thoughts?
We have a ton of Vaughn questions that the Twitter world wanted to answer. People want to know what we think about, you know, Keyshawn Vaughn and where he's going. So this might tie in nicely to that. But man, I can't help but see Terry McLaurin, know what he did last year, but I can't help, Nate, but go back to when we had Evan Silva on the show, and Silva came up right away and said, if you don't have Terry McLaurin, find a way to get Terry McLaurin, basically, because what he's about to do this coming season in 2020 is going to be monstrous. So all I needed was the Evan Silva stamp, and that's kind of as easy as it is for me, you know. I would find it hard pressed to give up McLaurin for the 1-8, and not even knowing that, you know, the running back that you want is there. And even still, I'm not sure McLaurin for Vaughn straight up in this sense is where I would lean. Obviously, we don't know what other kind of running backs Daryl rosters right here. So that makes it a bit tougher. But in a vacuum, given what he's given us, Nate, I have a hard time giving up Terry McLaurin. The Redskins didn't really do much in the sense of adding talent. I'm super, super high on Antonio Gibson. You know, Darius Geis is still a question mark. Wide receiver wise, they added Antonio Gandy-Golden later on in the draft. Outside of McLaurin, though, you're looking at guys like Kelvin Harmon and Trey Quinn, I guess. So really, it's the McLaurin show. He's got the rapport with the quarterback, assuming the quarterback stays under center. McLaurin is such a hard fade for me, man. I'm gonna ride McLaurin until the wheels fall off, and I'm expecting a big season because Evan Silva told me so. Mm.
And you know, Keyshawn Vaughn has been obviously building hype of late, but I don't think you have to take him at the 1-8. Now, I'm assuming that this is a non-super flex league because I don't think that when I read this, we said it was super flex. So that certainly changes things. And I recently did that I'm Outraged episode, and I talked about Keyshawn Vaughn because he's a guy that's going much later in these drafts. You know, I like Terry McLaurin. I think he's going to have a huge year this year. I'm with you. Evan Silva laid it out perfectly. 2-6 still gets you a really good player. And again, depending on what these leagues are, there's still talent falling there. I don't think Keyshawn Vaughn makes it all the way there in savvy drafts. I think in most drafts, Keyshawn Vaughn's going kind of between that 109 to 112 pick right now in non-superflex, which I'm assuming this is again. So, you know, it depends on if you're really hurting at running back, but I think Terry McLaurin's got a ton of upside going into next year. And I just think you can get more than that. I think McLaurin in the 2-8 or the 2-6 is just too much for the 1-8 and the 3-8. So, good question. I like Vaughn, but I just don't know that I'm making that trade. So, Jarek Backus, how do you value a player like Isabella with a 15% breakout rating, who was hyped coming into the league and efficient when he got touches, versus players like James Prochet and Joe Reed, who aren't hyped but have an over 20% breakout rating?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Isabella's kind of been one of the darlings from the onset for us over here at the Breakout Finder. I think being in Arizona, being tied to Kyler Murray, certainly the Cardinals added talent. They have DeAndre Hopkins and Christian Kirk still there, and Larry Fitz is going to keep playing football, I guess. So Isabella, you know, on paper, somewhat buried, but again, as Jarek suggested here, when he's gotten looks, he's been efficient. So I think there's a lot of untapped potential there. And again, the Breakout Finder loves him. You know, Backus hit on it. We've had plenty of tweets and plenty of discussion on Andy Isabella. He's a player that I'm going to continue to, you know, roster and kind of hope that, you know, a coaching staff like Arizona finds a way. I mean, again, and in Arizona particularly, where they have a pen, you know, they want to go for wide. They want to have as many wide receivers in the field as possible. So, you know, Isabella is a player where, you know, athleticism, you know, breakout finder, landing spot, all that stuff kind of lines up for him. It's very hard for me to, again, hop off a player like Andy Isabella when all those boxes are still checked, versus guys like James Prochet, who, you know, the Breakout Finder likes him, and again, there's reason behind that. But for me, you know, the Breakout Finder is certainly one part of it, one very important part of it. But you know, Prochet to me just always has kind of been just a guy throughout the entire process. Watching him, productive, sure, you know, solid hands, all this stuff. But to me, a player that I don't find myself, I wasn't going out of my way for. I don't think I'm going to go out of my way for it now. And Joe Reed, you know, I wrote about Joe Reed, you know, plenty pre-draft, his ability on special teams, his impact, his dynamism was obvious. You know, the Breakout Finder likes him for the dynamic store. Landing in Los Angeles, there are question marks there. You know, Herbert was drafted early. That is the quarterback of the future. We think there seems to be some sort of a path for Joe Reed going forward. But again, landing spot kind of muddles things up. And again, going back to the Scott Barrett episode, you know, where landing spot does kind of tell a lot of the story and how important it is. It's just very hard for me to, despite the breakout rating, you know, push someone like Joe Reed so far up the board and kind of ignore guys like Andy Isabella, who have all those boxes checked, where these other players might only have, you know, a box or two checked. That's kind of how I look at it. Just super, super simple. How many boxes are left checked when comparing these players, you know, apples to apples?
I mean, the DeAndre Hopkins trade was obviously the big move that happened for them. But, you know, they didn't add any other major wide receiver talent. So with that being said, Andy Isabella was a second-round pick. He was, I believe, the eighth wide receiver taken in 2019. So he still has a ton of draft capital behind him. He was an uber producer in college. He's a super good athlete. Larry Fitzgerald, again, mm-hmm. is kind of at the end here. DeAndre Hopkins is on the outside. Christian Kirk's playing the slot. Larry Fitzgerald, again, I mean, as soon as it's over for him, and I don't know when it's going to be over. I mean, who's going to retire first, Frank Gore or Larry Fitzgerald?
Crazy.
Neither of them, maybe. But Andy Isabella certainly has forever. An opportunity to slide into that outside role. I mean, we saw him play in some big spots and make some wildly efficient plays when he was given opportunity. And it's just one of those cases where he didn't get on the field that much, and we hope that year two is the year for him. Again, he's not a guy that came from a big conference. It was kind of one of the knocks on him. So I still like him. I like him more than most of these other players. Again, he's got second-round draft capital, so we definitely cannot forget that. That's certainly playing in his favor. And he plays with Kyler Murray, and he plays in an offense that plans on, quick offensive plays, a lot of plays per game. So there's still a ton of opportunity there. So he's a hold for me. You can't sell him because you're going to take a loss if you inevitably drafted him semi-early last year. So hold on to him. I like Joe Reed as a later guy. James Prochet, I could take him or leave him, but I still like Andy Isabella. But that breakout rating is certainly something you got to pay attention to. So I guess we've dipped into Twitter questions. Is that what's happened now?
We dial up these duo pods once every other week. Once a month, whatever it might be, whenever the hell we feel like it. And we normally reach into the Patreon mailbag. And sometimes, whether on the Breakout Finder account or one of our own personal accounts, we will throw the old fishing rod out there and see what happens, Nato. And so we, I threw out a tweet a handful of hours ago, and we had a bunch of replies, and some of them were a bit silly, and some of them were a little more serious. Some people want some help here with their dynasty rosters or some Devy related questions. So I threw about two dozen on there, or something like that, or less than two dozen. So why don't you give it the old scroll then pick out ones that kind of tickle your fancy, whatever's screaming at
you.
Man,
this is certainly a choose your own death thing here, because I'm looking at these questions and I'm like, man, do I really want to go deep into this? How about we go to a Geist Truther? It says talent versus landing spot. Are we still holding Judy over Mims, Pittman, and Chenault?
Man, Judy's interesting. Judy's been my guy through and through. And then my initial rankings that I put out, and it spawned a lot of, Scott Barrett angst, and he came on the show and kind of had the flamethrower with him. But I had Judy below Mims initially. But a lot of smart people kind of talked me back into it. I think Mims year one. So again, he didn't specify dynasty or redraft here. So I'll kind of give you my spin, looking at both lenses, and then I'd love to get your take, because I know you are a big Michael Pittman guy, and Chenault too is sitting there in this question as well, who's been one of your guys through and through. But I think in a redraft spot, you can maybe make the case for Mims splashing year one, and probably having a solid, overall dynasty outlook as well, tethered to Sam Darnold. Again, it goes back to overall stability of that Jet spot, given Adam Gase potentially maybe being on the outs or, the seat warming up sooner than later. But I personally love Mims as a talent. Was my wide receiver three overall landed, and now is attached to a young Sam Darnold, who, again, I spoke about earlier, who I still believe in talent wise and, ability to grow and become a better quarterback. So I think for him, athleticism, landing spot, all that stuff, Mims checked those boxes. So he might edge out Judy year one, but I think Judy year two and three certainly has a chance to be neck and neck, even with someone like Courtland Sutton. We spent a little bit of time talking about Drew Lock. If Drew Lock takes that step forward, man, and can support a Courtland Sutton campaign, as well as bring along a guy like Jerry Jeudy, and Jerry Judy's a good fit regardless because of what he does off the line and his ability to kind of create for himself with that footwork. So you can see, Courtland Sutton being you know, the big play specialist, you know, Drew Lock looking down the field. I mentioned Drew Lock's arm talent. He connected with Sutton plenty last year, you know, but adding a guy like Judy who's able to kind of create and make up these big plays on his own, you know, that could be a special combination right there. So I think redraft lens going, you know, Mims over Judy, I think makes some sense. But I think Judy, for me, long term, it goes back to the talent. And again, if the Drew Lock stars align, you know, things could be looking up really, really quick. I think Chenault's the one that I'm most interested in here, Nate, because he's a player that, again, if he's healthy and he's not quite the athlete that we saw at the combine, but he's, you know, this one that was talked up about pre-combine, outside of DJ Shark. And again, it goes back to a little bit with the guy under center. How far is he going to take you? Is he going to be able to support Shark Plus? But Chenault's ability to kind of play these multiple spots, given his dynamic ability, he's someone that could be, you know, kind of, you know, sneaky value right now, and one that could kind of pay off big down the road. I have to imagine your chips are somewhat, if they're not all pushed in, Nate, they have to be almost, you know, very, very close to being all pushed in on someone like Chenault.
Chenault is certainly one of the guys that the breakout finder loved. He's very high in this class, shockingly high, in fact. And yeah, I mean, when you look at this list of these four players, I think it's undoubtable to me. I am truly on the side of Judy is the most talented wide receiver of this group of wide receivers that we just named. Of Judy, Mims, Pittman, and Chenault, to me, Jerry Judy is the best of all of them, talent-wise. But as the question asked, talent versus landing spot. I don't love the Broncos landing spot. I've made this argument a multitude of times. Now, it looks like every year or every other year, and sometimes two teams in a year, have produced two guys that were in the top 15. But it's a rarity. And it's even more rare for a quarterback like Drew Lock in an offense that had as such a low level of pass attempts as Denver did to make this happen. And they had a low level of pass attempts before they added a plethora of weapons. So now they've got a ton of options. And I'm not sure that Drew Lock has an allegiance to anybody. I mean, he's got some rapport with Cortland Sutton and, of course, Albert O, but the expectation's not that they're going to dial it up to him all the time. For me, if I had to rank this group now, I'm very, very high on Michael Pittman for a lot of reasons. Now, here's the deal. Jerry Jeudy and Chenault are both playing with young alpha wide receivers. They're both playing with young players that garner a ton of opportunity, a ton of targets. We saw last year Sutton was around 124 targets. We saw Chark was at 118 targets in 15 games, went over 1,000 yards receiving. I mean, very similar stat line to Cortland Sutton, in fact. So both those guys are going to necessarily be heavily involved. And both of those teams have, in my opinion, a deficiency at quarterback. I don't think that Minshew's the answer. And I'm not sure that Drew Lock is the long-term answer. We kind of don't know with either of these guys. So when to me, it comes down to Mims and Pittman. Mims is in the offense with literally very, very, very little competition. Jamison Crowder's there. Quincy Enunwa is actually out for 2020. I'm not sure that he was going to be a huge hurdle anyways, but he's out. So Mims is essentially the guy. I mean, the ball could be going to him all the time. I mean, there's no reason to believe he's not going to be the most heavily targeted wide receiver on this team. And it's fair to make the assumption that potentially he's the highest targeted rookie in this class at the end of 2020. But to me, when I look at all these situations and I look at the Colts and I realize that Phillip Rivers is on a one-year deal, and who knows if he doesn't get extended based on how well he's played or if he plays well there, they've got the offensive line. T.Y. Hilton is in a contract year. They draft Michael Pittman at 202. Michael Pittman has the athleticism. We saw him his junior year. He played that stretch wide receiver position, averaging 18 and a half yards per reception. Just last year, we saw him be a possession receiver with all that talent around him at USC. He killed it at the Senior Bowl. He stood out at the combine. I really love Pittman. And Pittman is going so much later. He's like the 208 in Superflex. So you can essentially have the 110 trade back to the middle of the second round and still get Michael Pittman, a guy that very well at the end of 2021 could outperform most of the other guys in this class. I mean, so he's the guy that I'm the most high on because his value is suppressed to the point where he's actually an incredible buy. Nobody's talking about him. And this is a little hint to the I'm Outraged episode that I just did. I put it all in on Pittman, and I lay out a multitude of reasons. But if I had to rank these guys right now, I think Judy's certainly the best player. But for me, it goes Pittman, probably, God, Mims, Judy, Chenault. And I know that seems crazy. And people are not going to love that. But, God, I just question what's going to happen in Denver. I know the argument is always take the talent. But you might be sitting on Jerry Jeudy and getting a total a variant production week over week for years. I don't know when Cortland Sutton goes away. So him and Cortland Sutton could kind of battle back and forth on any given week. Maybe one guy has the blow-up week, one guy doesn't. I don't know. And maybe in your opinion, Jerry Jeudy is a much better player than Cortland Sutton, and he eventually overtakes him in Denver. I don't know. He certainly got the draft capital. So it's an interesting question. There's going to be a lot of people wondering the same thing as we enter the season, and hopefully we get some games because it's certainly exciting to kind of speculate on this. Let's go to this guy. Let's go to Benjamin Lemley. Is that right, Lemley? Does that seem right? This is a Keyshawn Vaughn question because we didn't really dive into this here. Where do you all rank Keyshawn Vaughn in this class, and what do you think about him as a prospect? He's a difficult rank.
Yeah, I'm going to try to keep it very, very super simple, super high level. You and I chatted a bit pre-show, and we were fucking around, and I think my simple analysis of it is I think that Vaughn is a better player than Ronald Jones. Now, I know guys that are very sharp. You know, Matthew Freeman came out and said, "Don't, you know, hold on, not so fast about Keyshawn Vaughn. You got to, you know, Ronald Jones, this and that." Man, again, not even looking at draft capital, not even looking at production or athleticism or anything like that. I just think, given Brady's history with the running back, you know, I guess I should say recent history, how he's relied on guys like James White out of the backfield. I know they got guys like Dare over in Tampa Bay already, but the interesting part is Brady isn't tethered or doesn't have a history to any of those guys. You know, Arians went out, the Bucs, they drafted Keyshawn Vaughn. I don't want to mention draft capital here. I think just looking at them as a player, prospect wise, you know, talent wise, what they bring to the table. I think Vaughn as a receiver, I won't say underrated, but certainly capable. I don't see why he can't become and certain, you know, kind of push his way, you know, force the issue and push his way up the depth chart and become Brady's kind of, you know, go-to option out of the backfield, you know, on these important, you know, kind of third downs or, you know, on these passing downs and when he's able to swing it out, you know, out wide like he did with James White. I think Vaughn's hands are very, very capable. So I think in a vacuum, I think Vaughn fits what Brady kind of looks for and leans on as a running back out of the backfield. You know, we can go to the cliches, just how hard he plays, tough nose runner, all this stuff. But I think what Arians wants to do, what Brady wants to do, I imagine Vaughn fits that profile. And there was certainly some level of attraction there, given the fact that he was drafted, given the unknowns of Ronald Jones. I feel pretty confident, you know, where Vaughn is ranked. And like Nate said, he's been kind of sneaking off the board late first round or wherever it's been in savvier drafts. I think Vaughn can pay off big, you know, being tied to Tom Brady this year and, you know, maybe next year, the next couple years, whatever it might be, and given this Tampa Bay offense. So I think he is difficult just because there was some kind of, you know, uncertainty, you know, and some back and forth. You know, I won't say he was a polarizing prospect, but there were kind of two sides to the story with Vaughn and those sides were split. But I think he landed in a pretty solid spot. And I think again, profile wise, landing spot wise, talent wise, he kind of checks those boxes and fits what Brady needs and what he's gonna want to do.
Yeah, I don't think it's as much of a question mark for me. I think when I look at this class, I think he's the number six running back for me. I think I've got him ahead of A.J. Dillon. I've got ahead of Zach Moss. And he's right behind the big five running backs, or as Matt Kelly would say, the big four running backs. So I've got him right there at number six. And I'm not too concerned about him. I think you bring up all the right points. We bring up the fact that Tom Brady has a propensity of being a check down quarterback at times, and Keyshawn Vaughn can play that role for him. Ronald Jones he finally got a little more faith by the organization and got some opportunities, but he's not the pass blocker that Vaughn is. He's not the pass catcher that Vaughn is. And third round draft capital is no joke. I mean, that's where hits get mined, in fantasy football at the NFL level. So, we've talked about sort of his history, transferring schools and college. We talked about sort of the Lovie Smith era where he got fucked in 2016. Then in the SEC at Vanderbilt, he stand out, and plays super well. So I think deservedly so, this guy gets drafted where he should have been. And this might have been one of the perfect backs to have ended up in this offense. And I think a lot of people are really high on him already. I don't think it's as divided as maybe this question may have made it seem like it was, especially when you look at super flex leagues. Keyshawn Vaughn's going before Chenault, before Zach Moss, before Bryan Edwards. He's going right behind T. Higgins and A.J. Dillon, and that's probably because a lot of people are on the draft capital zealot wagon. If Aaron Jones doesn't get re-signed, then I can see what the major allure is with A.J. Dillon, and I acquired him again in a league just because of that fact. So I've got Keyshawn Vaughn at running back 6. I like him over those other ones. And if you're drafting towards the end of the first round, that's probably about what you're going to have to do to take him. And he could be the surprise player in this 2020 draft class.